Kevin Anschell, PhD, joins us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Anschell.
Hi, good morning.
We're always glad to have you here. You are an expert in attention deficit disorder, and you always have great headlines to bring to us, and you brought us an interesting one about dopamine. What's dopamine?
Dopamine is a neurotransmitter. It's one of the major neurotransmitters involved in attention, organizing, planning, motivation, and also reinforcement.
Okay, and but it's located in the brain?
Yes, absolutely. It's a neurotransmitter, so it's produced and circulated in the brain.
Okay, so produced and circulated in the brain, and when is it used? I mean, it's not just always there, or if it is it always being used? Explain it to me.
Yes, it is always being used. Certainly there are some ebbs and flows for dopamine production and turnover, but dopamine, as a general rule, is very important in lots of our basic autonomic functions that help to keep us alive. So it is always there. And
explain
it's
autonomic,
being,
if you will.
Autonomic is automatic. Things, heart rates,
blinking,
blood pressure, blinking.
Those kinds of things. All right.
The kind of things that we have to do to be alive, and you don't have to say, heart, I want you to beat now.
Okay.
These are the things that are automatic.
Okay, so it rules those, but it rules other things too.
Absolutely.
What are some of the other things it rules?
It's a major player in higher order cognition, such as attention, organizing, planning, working memory, your short-term memory.
Ah, so as somebody who deals in ADHD all the time, this is like the number one thing you're looking at, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. This has been a neurotransmitter that honestly for years we've had suspicions is very low in individuals with ADHD.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, well, let's talk about that because that's really what this study was about. They did some studies. They did images of people's brains.
Yes. This was a neuroimaging study in which they had 53 adults with ADHD and 44 non-ADHD adults, and they had them in a neuroimaging study in which they were looking at the activity at dopamine receptors, and so these are the areas of the neuron that attract the dopamine particles, and once they attract and they hook onto the neuron, then they are then used by that cell in order to help that cell do what it needs to do.
Okay, so if I picture this, I've seen things on TV, I've seen pictures of people's brains, and it's like lights light up here and lights light up there. So, and that's what you're talking about here. Okay, and they were able to track the dopamine?
Yes.
And what did they find?
They found that the adults with ADHD had lower levels of dopamine activity in particular areas of the brain that are involved with reinforcements and reward. And these are areas such as the nucleus accumbens and the caudate. And those are two areas of the brain that are involved in what we call our pleasure pathway. And so this is the area of the brain that becomes particularly active or excited when we're engaged in something that we enjoy.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about eating a cookie for a moment, all right? Mm-hmm. And I am an adult with ADHD, and when I eat a cookie, you're telling me that it won't have the same effect on my brain as it has on yours because you don't have ADHD?
I think what this study was looking at was a baseline level, so it wasn't image of when they were cookies or when they were eating a cookie or doing anything pleasurable. So it's just the baseline level, and the adults with ADHD had lower activity.
Okay, so what does that tell us? How do we translate it?
Yeah, well, I think one way to translate these data is helping to understand why individuals with ADHD would find things such as a boring, repetitive task very boring and mm-hmm. repetitive, and actually not be able to complete it, where adults who do not have ADHD would be able to complete it. They may not enjoy it, but they'd be able to complete it. And the authors of this study are hypothesizing that these low turnover rates of dopamine are one reason why adults with ADHD may seek high reinforcement activities such as skydiving or other things in which you're going to get a lot of excitement and a lot of reinforcement just as a way to modulate these dopamine levels.
So if we could take that then to, and of course this was adults, but let's translate it to children for a moment if we can. We look at children in a class who have ADHD, and they quite often act out. So if I'm understanding you correctly, this study would say that one of the reasons they're acting out is because being in a boring classroom just is not enough stimulus for them.
Right, yes. I mean, I think that's one explanation. I think there are other explanations, including impulsivity, et cetera, that they act before they think. But one explanation is it just a way for them to try to enhance their dopamine turnover in their brain is to become involved in something they find reinforcing.
Mm-hmm. And it's part of the risk-taking behavior as well.
Yes.
You know, the risk of, I'll get in trouble, but won't that be fun kind of thing. Yeah.
Could be.
Very interesting. Okay, what happens next? Where do they take a study like this? All right, now they've determined that the dopamine levels are lower in people with ADHD. So what?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think obviously the goal is to improve the functioning of anyone with ADHD. So I think this is going to be translated into hopefully some improvements or some enhancements in the medications that are available. Also, I think we can use this in therapy, to help the person with ADHD understand their behavior. And you can also use it in the classroom, on the work setting, et cetera, to come up with a plan for how are they going to be able to manage this boring, repetitive job. So, for example, having lots of breaks in which they're able to do something reinforcing would, at least on paper, seem like a very good idea.
So is this something we're looking at down the road where a workplace might test an employee and say, oh, look at this, you're having dopamine problems, so therefore we're going to give you this job instead of this job?
I don't see that anytime in the near future, but I certainly can't say it's not within the realm of possibility, but I don't think it's anywhere in the near future.
It's always good to come up with a provocative question at the end of a headline. It makes us think, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, Dr. Kevin Atchell, thank you so much for coming by this morning. Good conversation.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Well, folks, science is about testing our beliefs about the world, and some of our most strongly held ideas are about how to discipline our kids, how to teach them to be better kids. Well, when I was a kid, it was common to, quote, discipline kids by spanking or slapping them. Now, having been on the painful end of that a couple of times myself and having learned nothing but resentment, I've been curious about this ever since. My wife and I did the personal experiment of never hitting either one of our kids, and they both turned out great. Lots of good friends, doing great in school. But with my scientist hat on, I've still been skeptical. Maybe our kids were unusual. But now, some major, well-designed research seems to answer this question once and for all. The first study observed over 2,500 babies and their moms, starting when the babies were one and again at 2 and 3. The researchers found that discipline involving parental aggression, physically hurting one-year-olds, led to the kids being more aggressive at age 2. Little surprise there. But in one of the biggest surprises, it also led to lower intellectual development, less thinking skill at age 3. Their brains were negatively affected. Verbal punishment, like yelling at one-year-olds, didn't result in the same problem. But again, on the positive side, if moms were emotionally supportive while verbally disciplining, their kids had even better thinking skills later. And a couple of other studies of over 750 5-year-olds that went on for 10 years found continuing to hit kids as they got older increases the chance of behavior problems as teenagers, and that hitting kids isn't about having a bad kid, but more because of situational stresses on the parents, like low income, being a single parent, or living in a dangerous neighborhood. The big conclusion? Parents should lower their stress levels so they don't take it out on their kids. Now, we're very hesitant to change our views about our important beliefs. So for those of you who are still skeptical and still think hurting kids is useful to help them learn, I propose you do your own experiment. Next time your child misbehaves, ask your spouse to bring you the paddle or the belt. Then ask them to teach you how to be a better parent by giving you a beating and see what you learn. Discipline means teaching with love, not hurting. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.